Well, good morning. I have something on my mind that I've been thinking about through the week, and I must confess that I don't feel that I have the ability to say that I'm an expert on this at all. The more I've looked into it, the more I feel like I'm such a neophyte in my understanding. So I just kind of like to maybe start building some foundation, at least this morning. We'll see how far we get. Well, I'd like to write a word on the board here. So the word that we wrote on the board is accusation. And if we look that word up in the dictionary, what I found was it's the act of charging with a crime or offense, the act of accusing of any wrong or injustice. Another definition is the charge of an offense or a crime, of the declaration containing the charge. Another thing that's, I'm not a very much of an expert when it comes to grammar anyway, but the word accusation is considered by and large a noun. Okay? So an accusation, and what, in my simple analogies or thinking process of what a noun is, generally, a noun is, I was always taught it was a person, place, or thing. It's an actual thing. So if an accusation is a noun, then it immediately has this element of fact about it. Are you following me so far? This thing of, if somebody says something to us and it's an accusation, then immediately there is an implied sense that it's true. Okay? So we live in a society that, and it's not based on something, it's not a novel thing. It's been around for many centuries. In fact, they trace it back to some of the laws of the Roman Empire of being innocent until proven guilty. We feel like that our judicial system, at least theoretically, is the best. That you're innocent until proven guilty. You might look like a criminal. Everybody might believe you're a criminal, but they can't incarcerate you long term as a criminal unless they prove you're a criminal. There's a limit. If you pick someone up and arrest them with an accusation, there is a limit. You can't keep them for 5 years while you're gathering evidence to try to prove that they're, I don't know what the time frame is, but it's, our judicial system is such that there has to be other accusations or something to keep someone incarcerated. They have to prove that you're a criminal. All right? But if someone is accused, if there is an accusation, how do we respond to that? Have you ever felt accused? Have you ever been accused? What's your immediate reaction? Especially if you believe you're innocent. What do? We begin to try to explain. We begin to try to defend ourselves, don't we? That's the normal thing. If somebody says, well, I don't know, I want to try to keep from using too many examples there, but the reality is we've all faced accusation. And there is something, the more I've thought about this, the more it's such a stark reality of my world can be turned completely upside down with a simple accusation, and it may be completely false. But immediately, everything that I do seems to be hinged around an accusation. All right? Therefore, an accusation is a very powerful tool to manipulate people and situations. You can make an arbitrary accusation and change the tenor. You can change the tone. You could be having a wonderful time at a family reunion and someone make an accusation, and guess what happens? You could ruin everybody's day. You could make an accusation of some behavior that was unacceptable, try to bring a skeleton out of the closet somewhere, and it might not even be, there may not even been a skeleton in the closet, but you could make an accusation, and immediately everybody's trying to either validate it or defeat it. And the whole reason that you come together could have been totally lost. And now it just becomes a big hubbub. All because, and you just manipulated the situation. You just took control of something and basically ruined everybody's day. Especially if it's a false accusation. There is always a sense of guilt if someone makes an accusation. Even if you're innocent, if someone makes an accusation, you immediately feel a sense of guilt. Why would they make that? What is it about me that causes someone to make an accusation? And we feel a sense of guilt. What is it about me that would cause an accusation can be towards a group of people. There could be an accusation made towards us as a congregation. There could be an accusation made. There have been lots of accusations made toward a specific race of people. It happens all directions on the lines of race. It happens against gender. Men making accusations against women, and women making blanket accusations against men. And it's a very powerful tool that ends up controlling lives and situations. And as I think about this, and my mind was dwelling on it, what do we do with them? How has those in the past handle this? And we need some help. So let's go to Luke, the 19th chapter, and we want to notice something. This is a familiar story. We all know this story. Luke chapter 19 is where Jesus was coming. I'll just read beginning in verse 1. And Jesus entered and passed through Jericho, and behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus, which was the chief among the publicans, and he was rich. Now, everybody know what a publican was? A tax collector. All right. And he sought to see Jesus, who he was, and could not for the press, because he was little of stature. And we all have heard the story about how Zacchaeus was this little man and he couldn't see because of the crowd. It says here, and he ran before and climbed up into a sycamore tree and said to see him, for he was to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and saw him and said unto him, Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must abide at thy house. Did you know, this is a little side thought, but every time that we make a plan to be in Jesus' presence, he takes note of it. Zacchaeus knew that Jesus was, I don't know how he knew, maybe it was the main thoroughfare through town, and he knew that the probability that Jesus was going to come down that street was very likely, and he ran ahead of the crowd that was moving and got up in that tree because he wanted to be able to see Jesus for himself. You know, when we want to see Jesus for ourselves, he'll probably stop and look at us. And he'll probably say, I'm willing to talk to you. And he told Zacchaeus, said, come on down. I want to go to your house. So let's go back to the story. And he made haste and came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all murmured, saying that he is gone to be guest with a man that is a sinner. Now Zacchaeus, as far as I know, was a Jew, but he was a Jew that was basically employed by the Roman Empire to collect taxes. So it wasn't like he was a Gentile. Zacchaeus came down and Jesus went with him. And Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor. And if I have taken anything from any man by false accusation, I restore him fourfold. So that's the point I want us to get to. Zacchaeus said, in being a tax collector, if I have taken anything from somebody by false accusation, I'm going to restore it fourfold. Now, how many of us here today, if we got a letter in the mail that had three letters on it, that's a acronym. You know what an acronym is? Letters that stand for words. And then one word after that. How many of us would find that kind of controlling it? If we got a letter that said IRS, and then after that it said audit. Now what would we do? Would we say, oh well, just another junk mail, piece of junk mail? Is that what we'd do? Our first thing was, oh my, I wonder what this is all about. We'd open that thing up and spread it out, and we'd probably read every word on the page. I want to know exactly what this is all about. And Zacchaeus had been in a place of auditing people's finances. It wasn't quite like we do it today in our United States. I don't know exactly how it worked, but I believe it was his responsibility to go around and assess what everybody's household goods were, and then he was to levy a tax accordingly. If he came by your place and you had 500 sheep there, then your tax would be different than somebody that just had two. And so it wasn't that you filled out this little questionnaire and reported it all. He was the one that went around and observed to see what it was. And he said, if I have taken anything from anybody by false accusation, what would that imply? That he had tried to manipulate or move the system in the favor of collecting more revenue, more taxes. And one of the things I found about a publican is a publican was basically like the government, the Roman government had farmed that out to them. It would be like someone that had a franchise for something, a popular brand, a franchise for McDonald's in our nation today. And the whole intent is that you'll be able to make a profit. And if you are able to collect more taxes, then you make more money. And what do we know about Zacchaeus and his personal welfare? The scripture said he was rich, right? Zacchaeus had gathered a lot of taxes. And whether he was really diligent or whether he had implied some false accusations, and he knew, the point I want us to get here is Zacchaeus knew how powerful accusations was. Well, isn't that, you know, you come to my house and it looks like I've got a lot of equipment. Unfortunately, not very much of it works. You know, I've got, Grayson was at my house yesterday, Friday, and we were outside and he is fascinated with tractors, and he's saying a few words and he says, another tractor. He's finding tractors all over the place. Unfortunately, he doesn't know that most of them don't run. And, you know, if somebody came and they said, look at all of these tractors and assess me for all of these tractors, when in reality, most of them are kind of like, they're just my good junk, okay? They're just mostly scrap. By accusation, you could maybe force someone to pay taxes on things that weren't really taxable. And Zacchaeus knew the power of accusation. That's the thing I want us to get a hold of, is how powerful accusation is and how much of an impact it has in our life. Okay? I'd like for us to turn now to Revelations, the 12th chapter, and notice what John said over here. And I could go in maybe to a lot of details. We've been there before as a congregation, so maybe I won't take us down that path too far, but I'll give a little explanation here. Verse 9, chapter 12, it says, the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ, for the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. So the accuser that accuses the brethren, very plainly in this verse, it says it was the dragon. It was that old serpent called the devil and Satan. It was the devil and Satan manifested as a dragon or an old serpent. And here's where I want to tell you what I believe that is without a lot of explanation. I believe he's talking about the ruling pagan worship system that was overthrown in the Roman Empire somewhere around 300 to 312 AD. And he's talking about the worship system that was sacrificing human life, that was causing a lot of atrocities to being done. It was the force that persecuted the early Christians in the Roman Empire. It's the thing that caused Paul to be executed and become a martyr. And that thing was overthrown after Paul had already gone on, had already been martyred and all of that. But he says the accuser, John was prophesying. John didn't live to see it happen, but John was prophesying. And he said that old dragon, that pagan system, is being thrown out. It's being cast down. And the accuser of the brethren is being conquered. The devil knows better than anybody else how powerful accusations are. How many of us have had, and I know all of us would have to raise our hands, how many of us have felt accused by the enemy? We've all had to contend with it. The devil will come along and tell us things like, you haven't been praying enough. Or he may come along and say, a real Christian wouldn't act like that. He may come along and tell us that if you're really saved, you would do this or you would do that. But he throws out, and what do we do immediately when that happens? We feel that we've been attacked, and we have been. And we feel that we have to begin to try to look for an explanation or an excuse to try to defend ourselves and defeat that. He's talking about the power of Satan in the ruling or the ecclesiastical systems. It was cast out. It didn't have the power anymore to gather up Christians and burn them at the stake. That was gone about 312 A.D. They became persecuted, but by different forces. All right? He will try to use accusations against us today on a personal level. We don't have our, not yet anyway, but our government is not a pagan government to the extent that if they catch you being a Christian, we have the freedom to come and worship here today. We're not under the radar where if we, the threat of them catching you worshiping God is terms for imprisonment, but that's what the early Christians had to face. So that was thrown out. But the devil comes along and tries to accuse all of us today, tries to cause us to feel intimidated and overpowered. So I'd like to begin looking at how some people that were accused, specifically, individually, they were accused, and how they handled it. We've kind of talked about at this point what accusation is. We've talked about what how the devil tries to use accusation. The machinery that he had in place in the early Christian era, at the early morning church, Satan used paganism to accuse the brethren, to torment them, to bring them in, bring them into subjection. And we read about Zacchaeus and how he realized how powerful accusation was as being a tax collector. So I'd like to go to the book of Daniel, and I'd like to look here at what happened and how the ones in Daniel responded. So we'll go to Daniel, the third chapter. And we'll begin reading in the eighth verse. It says, "Wherefore at that time certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews." And now the setting is that the Nebuchadnezzar had set up this golden statue and was going to had commanded everyone to bow down to worship at this statue. He says in verse 9, they spake and said unto King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falleth down, not down and worshipeth, that he should be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Now that's the accusation. They didn't bow down. They don't worship your gods. And they're not worshiping this image that you've set up. And Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. When they brought these men before the, and then they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? Now if ye be ready, that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made well. But if ye worship not, ye shall be cast to the same hour into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hand?" You all know this story. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee. If so be, our God is..." "whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O God, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." Now, here's what I want us to get a hold of. These men, in the king's eyes, and according to the king's commandment, were being disobedient. And the accusation came. Accusation, the word itself is a noun. And the accusation came that they didn't bow down, and they don't serve the same gods that Nebuchadnezzar served. So I have to ask us this question: was it true? It was a true. It was a valid accusation. It was not a false accusation. We are going to be accused of things sometimes that is very valid. It's legit. Somebody said, "You're a Christian, aren't you?" Well, yes, by the grace of God, I'm a Christian. It's a true statement. And then they're going to put us in the furnace. They're going to start putting some pressure on us. What did they do? How did they respond? Because I feel like I have to know, what are we supposed to do? Somebody comes with a valid accusation. your spouse is going to be gone, and I suppose you're going to be faithful to her. Well, yes, that's an accusation, but I'm not going to deviate from that. What kind of ridicule are you going to put on me? What are you going to try to do? Well, this is a very real situation. And what did they do? They said, "We're not careful to answer you. Yes, your accusation, it's true. But I know this. The God we serve is able to deliver us from whatever you want to put on. It's better." There are accusations out there that's very legit. And it's true. And I'm not going to change. Happened the same way with Daniel. You remember? They said, come here, king. We're going to make us a decree. Nobody can ask anything of any god or man except you for 30 days. Wouldn't that be nice? Yes, man, that sounds good. I like that. He signed it into law, and guess what they found? They found Daniel going back and praying. And they accused him. And Daniel faced the lion's den. You may get thrown into some lion's dens, and you may be faced with some fiery furnaces. Because of what? Because of wasn't the whole accusation? And both times, the accusation was engineered to put pressure on Daniel and his three friends. And we have to remain true. In John, the 8th chapter, we have a story of another woman that was accused. We know this story. This woman was caught red-handed in adultery. And it says the scribes and the Pharisees brought her to Jesus. In the 8th chapter, 3rd verse, says the scribes and Pharisees brought unto him a woman taken in adultery. And when they'd set her in the midst, they said, you know what the law says? The law says we're supposed to stone her. And what did Jesus say? Well, whichever one of you don't have any reason to be condemned yourself, just pick up a stone and throw the first stone. And he ignored them. Don't you know there was a lot of tension there? You think you feel a lot of tension if somebody accuses you of something. Don't you know this was a lot of tension here in this setting? And after a period of time, what happened to those that were going to stone her? They disappeared. And Jesus, when they continued asking him and lifted up himself and said, he that is without sin among you, let him cast a stone in her. And he stooped down and wrote on the ground. And when they heard it, being convicted, well, I've kind of paraphrased that. We know what happened. They disappeared. 10th verse. When Jesus had lifted up himself and saw none but the woman, he said unto her, woman, where are thine accusers? Where are those that brought this accusation against you? It was factual. She was guilty. Hath no man condemned thee? She said, no man, Lord. And Jesus said, neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more. Go and live in a way that no one can accuse you of that again. You know, accusations are very powerful, and they will adjust your life. They will cause you to feel that life is hopeless. This woman's life felt hopeless at this point. She didn't feel like there was any way that she was going to get out of this. She almost could feel the stones coming and hitting her when Jesus said, whichever one of you don't have any sin, just you pick up the stone and be first. I think she could almost feel the stone because she knew what the accusation was all about. It was God's mercy that was extended to her through Jesus Christ. It was his mercy that delivered her from that accusation. It was God's mercy that spared Daniel from being eaten by the lions. It was God's mercy that spared Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego from being consumed by the fire. We have to get something from this. These individuals that were accused specifically, and all of the accusations were correct. All of them were. The Lord has a plan of mercy for all of us, I believe. And we have to face accusations How do we say this? We have to face them for what they are. If this woman had started screaming and running and trying to get away from those men, I don't think that the mercy would have been extended to her. If Daniel or the three Hebrew children had have yielded to the pressure, if they had have began to try to call down fire from heaven or something to avert the consequences that the accusation was dictating at that time, I believe that there would have been a different result. But they just stood right where they were. They didn't allow the accusation to deter their course. So I want to challenge us. Somebody or some entity may accuse us, but even if the accusation is true, we have two options. Ask God to have mercy on us if we're in the wrong. And if we're in the right, if we're doing the right thing, if you're accused of being a company man when you're just doing your job like you've been hired to do, I know what that's like. Well, you're just friends with the boss or whatever. No, I'm just doing what I was hired to do. Then stay true to it. Don't allow the accusations to deter us. And what happens? The Lord will get you out of the lion's den. The Lord will get you out of the fiery furnace. And if you're in the wrong, ask Him for mercy. Yes, this is true. And Lord, how do I fix this? I want to spend some time, and I'm not going to have time to do it all this morning, so we're going to have to take this up this evening probably, but I want to spend some time with false accusation. What did Zacchaeus say? If I have taken anything from anyone by false accusation, I'm going to restore fourfold. Have you ever been falsely accused? That's those accusations of somebody saying, you're just like your mama, or you're just like your daddy, in a very negative context. You're just like all men, or you're just like all women, or you're just like a kid, and capitalizing on youth and inexperience. Those kind of accusations hurt. And how do we deal with those? Because immediately we may have felt a level of acceptance. You know, you might feel accepted by your peers or your family or whoever it is until someone says, you're just like whatever. And it's in a negative, it's cast in a negative light. Have you ever heard one of those type of statements, you're just like, and it be a positive thing? I don't know if I've ever heard one. It's always in a negative. You're just like all whatever it is. And it's always like it's the most despicable thing that you don't want to be associated with. You don't want to be associated with something that's got a negative image in someone's life, in mind, in life. So I want us to take a scripture home with us and think about it. And maybe we'll pick this up this evening in Matthew, the 5th chapter. And we begin reading in verse 11. This is what we call the Beatitudes. And every verse of the Beatitude starts with the word blessed or blessed, which means happy. He says, blessed, verse 11, are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. That sound like a false accusation? It does to me. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. So I want us to be thinking about this. How is it that we can be blessed? How is it that we can be happy right in the midst when men shall revile you? Because I want to confess to you today, when people have, when others, I don't want to say people because that sounds like the majority. It's not that. When others have made an accusation towards me that I felt was false, and I don't want to get too specific here, but if someone makes that accusation, you know, there's this immediate sense of guilt. There's immediate sense of, I need to defend myself. I need to explain this. There is an assumption. You know, if I remember one time on the job, I had made a repair and it was not successful. That means it still was broke. And one of my coworkers came up at the time that I was explaining to the customer that the repair I'd made was not satisfactory. I was not trying to sugarcoat it and send him down the road or anything. I was telling him, it's still not fixed. And this guy come up and he said, you ought to know better. You should have known not to do that. And he just really explained to the customer how sorry I was. And I felt so accused. Those kind of situations is what I'm talking about. How do you feel happy in those situations? How do you cope with that? Because there are times when our best intentions fail, don't they? We never intended to hurt something. We never intended for it to be a bad experience. Our intentions were good, and yet it didn't turn out so well. And now we are accused like we should have known better than to do that. It's like me telling, I could tell one of my little grandchildren that don't know how to drive, well, I won't ever let you do that again. You run into the tree. Well, there are only two, or there are only four. I couldn't expect them to do any different. They didn't have the experience. They didn't have the understanding there. Well, so I want us to think about that. Maybe with the Lord's help, we'll dig into this some more. Because accusations are real. They're powerful. And unfortunately, the devil tries to control us with them. And if we're not careful, we'll use them on other people. And that's not very pretty. So I want us to be very careful. If we make an accusation, let's be careful about how we make that. So I want to be what the Lord would have us to be, and Lord willing, we'll take this up this evening. You pray for me.